Shunam Hitataya Tatva Bodho Vidhyate
Om Vasudevendra Yogindram Natva
Om Vasudevendra Yogindram Natva
Om
Sahana Bhavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Saha Viryam Karavavahai Tejasvinavadhitamastu Ma Vidvishavahai Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
I heard you practicing. Let's do the first verse for me. And then the rest of it is just reading and it's illustrated.
The first
part? Yeah, the Vasudevendra. I know you've done it, but I haven't. You have to do it for me now. Okay. Go ahead.
Om Vasudevendra Yogindranatva Jnana Pradam Guru. Shunamhitartaya Tattva Bodho Vidhiyate.
Go to the next page.
Sadhana Chatushtaya Sampannadhikarinam Moksha-sadhana-bhutam
Tattva-viveka-prakaram
Vakshyamaha.
Just break the words, and then I'm going to talk a little bit about compounds for the, if you get familiar with some of these Sanskrit terminologies, samasas. So, sadhana, chatushtaya, the sadhana, chatushtaya, sampanna, adhikarinam, moksha, sadhana, bhutam. Tattva Viveka Prakaram Vakshamaha. This first term, Sadhana Chatushtaya Sampanna, then Adhikarinam. Adhikarinam is in the genitive plural, so if we read this backwards, we'll just start reading it backwards first, and then I'll kind of explain it, the compound. So, genitive plural, adhikarinam, for the adhikaris, for the qualified students. And now he gives the first one of the definitions, or a definition, I would say, for an adhikari. And we're going to go through now what this definition is for the qualified student, the adhikari. Sadhana chatushtaya sampanna. The one who sampanna, or sampati, sometimes you see sampanna, sampati. It means the wealth that you have this. You have this wealth. This is something that is yours, that you've accomplished. So, for the adhikari, who has this sampatti, or the sampanna, this wealth, called the sadhana chatushtaya. The sampatti, you can say the wealth of the sadhana chatushtaya. Chatushtaya means a group of four things. Sadhana means the four things they're talking about. So the one who has these qualifications, this group, this fourfold group of sadhanas. Here, the sadhana, when we do the Upayanishta and the Upayanishta, the sadhanas are attributes or values that are there in your mind. The sampatti means you have these values. The sadhanas, these values are necessary for gaining moksha, for being a qualified student, for being able to be present, to be available for this teaching. And so these qualities or attributes that you have, these mental attributes that you have, are called sadhanas, because they are the means for being able, for the mind to be able to receive this knowledge. And that's the Upayanishta. The mind has those characteristics, those qualities which allow it, make it available for receiving the Upayanishta, the teaching methodology, the shravana, manana, nididhyasana, these pramad, the way that we wield this teaching, the teaching itself as it is taught, that's the Upayanishta. But when this teaching is taught, it's taught to your mind, right? So your mind is the receptacle of this teaching. And so this mind needs certain qualities, certain characteristics, certain disposition in order to be available to receive that knowledge. And so when we say upaya, we're talking about the receptacle the qualifications of the receptacle, the one who is actually receiving the teaching. So who's receiving the teaching is your mind, your buddhi, actually. Okay. So the sadhana chatushtya sampatti, or what do they use here? Sampanna adhikarinam. So for the qualified student who has this wealth, who has these qualities, who has attained this group of fourfold sadhanas, your mind has these dispositions, these attributes. So that is necessary for a person to be an adhikari. So now, going to the last word in the sentence, vakshamaha. This is a future tense. It says, we will explain, we will tell you. We are going to tell you, it's a future, so we will tell you. And so if you only really have one teacher, at least one teacher at a time, so the question, who is the we? We're in unison, we are chanting. So the we stands for the sampradaya, the whole sampradaya, the perennial, the teacher-student, teacher-student, teacher-student sampradaya, the flow of this teaching that is gone, that goes back to Ishwara, goes back to the beginning of the creation. And so this teaching has remained the same. The example, if it's within the tradition, if it's the Vedanta, the Upanishad, what the Bhagavan taught is what the first teacher taught, it's what Dakshinamurti taught, it's what his student taught, and on Guru Sisha, it's like lighting a candle. One candle, flame, lights another candle, flames are the same. It's the same knowledge, that flow of knowledge, that same knowledge is being passed. So we will teach you, in your guru, your teacher, wherever they've come along in the sampradaya, if they're within that sampradaya, this is what they will be teaching you. This is the knowledge, this is what is to be known, and this is the methodology also for knowing it. So he says, we will teach you the tattva viveka prakaram. Prakara is a method. So the method of discriminative viveka, discriminative analysis. Viveka is a discriminative analysis of the tattva, of the ultimate reality. What is really the truth of all of this? What is the ultimate reality here? What is the tattva? So we will teach you the method of viveka, discriminative analysis of this ultimate reality. Which is, reading backwards again, moksha sadhana bhutam. Bhutam here means which has for its nature. So we wouldn't, in English we probably wouldn't even translate it. We would say, this tattva viveka prakaram, this method of teaching, this method of discriminative analysis of the truth, is the sadhana, is the means for moksha, is the means for liberation. So we say it is actually, to make it more clear, this is the direct means for liberation. Your mind can have so much antakarna shuddhi, you can be a dharmanishta, you can have a tremendous amount of shanti, you can be a saint, a very saintly person. And what that means is that your mind is definitely qualified and able to receive this teaching. If you want it, if you have that desire, that mamukshitvam for it, but you can have a saintly mind without being a jnani. Yes, all religions have saints. Now, saints are people who have a tremendous amount of dharma, a tremendous amount of compassion, of love, that you love to be with those people because their ability to love you, you know. We love those people who love us. And so the saintly people are those who have a very beautiful, vibrant mind, you know, but they don't necessarily have self-knowledge. Saintliness and self-knowledge, saintliness does not mean that the person who has self-knowledge is a person who has self-knowledge. Right? So here, it's almost like saying for these, the adhikaris who have certain qualifications, have a certain maturity, have a certain objectivity. We'll be going over this group of four in detail, but for now, just this group of four qualifications. for these qualified students who have these group, fourfold group of qualifications, we are going to teach, we will be teaching now, this method of discriminative analysis of the tattva, of the ultimate reality, which is the direct, immediate means for moksha. That's what is meant here by being the very, it is the sadhana for moksha, the sadhana for liberation. The one that, for this teaching to be a sadhana, a means for liberation, this sadhana, this shravana, manana, nididhyasana, the mind has to be available for it. The teaching can be there, but the mind's not there to receive it. And so it's this is a means of liberation for the adhikari, for that student who has to a good enough degree, like Winnicott's good enough mother, has to a good enough degree these qualifications. Okay? Now, this word viveka, we have two words, actually, both we use frequently. Vichara and viveka. Vichara means an analysis. It's just an analysis. I'm analyzing what the Shastra is saying. Viveka is a discriminative analysis. It's a discrimination. A discrimination here, a discriminative knowledge, viveka jnanam, means that two things are mixed up as one. That's where viveka comes in. Vichara is just analysis. You're analyzing the nature of something, you know. But with viveka, you're doing a discriminative analysis because two things are mixed up as one. And you have to do you have to have a prakara, a teaching methodology that will help you discriminate the one from the other. A common example we use in the Vedanta is the red hot iron ball. They're both in the same time and place. If you have a round iron ball that is glowing red hot, the red hot isn't over here. It's here. They're in the same place at the same time. What if you've never known iron and you've never known fire? Then you see this red hot iron ball, and then fire takes on the attributes of weight and round. It is heavy. Fire is bright and hot and heavy and round. Okay. And then iron, this iron, is, you know, heavy and round and hot and bright. They're one and the same thing. And so if your experience, you've never seen the one or the other, your experience is of this one entity, a discriminative analysis has to be done, so that you can separate the one from the other, that you can solve this mix-up, you know. And so for that we use the word viveka. If it's just the analysis of something to understand something, then that's not viveka. Viveka is not involved, you know. And in fact, when we do vichara, and Swamiji, in his book, he uses the example, a scientific example from science, uses the example of a black hole. And so say you're going to your science class and the teacher is teaching you about black holes. You have no idea really what a black hole is. You've probably heard of it, but you may be totally ignorant. But he will tell you what a black hole is, you know, and we'll do an inquiry about the nature of black holes. It's not like there's any confusion or there's any kind of a mix-up. It's just a vichara. It's an inquiry into the nature of this object, which has been discovered through science, so that you can know that it exists and this is what its characteristics are. That is vichara, right? Viveka, for us, viveka, in our situation, is necessary because there is a confusion going on between the Atma, my own self, this me, and what we call the Anatma, the Atma Anatma Viveka, this self that is actually me, and then these dresses that I've taken to be me. And so, for instance, let's look at it this way. I am here because when we're talking about the Atma, Atma Jnanam, self-knowledge, we want to know who I really am. But look at the situation. The student comes to the teacher and asks, please teach me who I am. Who am I really? Who am I really? Am I this person that is here standing before you? Am I really this body? Or is there some differentiation between me and this body? Am I really my mind? Or is there something about me that is free from my mind? But that requires viveka. Here I am. Am I my mind or not? Am I the one who transmigrates or not? Is there somebody who's free of transmigration? Am I, in my nature, am I the one who becomes a dharmi and then an adharmi? Am I actually becoming a dharmi and then an adharmi? Somebody who so religiously follows dharma and then, oops, I fall into a little bit of adharma there, so I find myself going back and forth. Am I transforming in that way as I'm collecting dharma and adharma? Am I continually transforming? Is my being changing? This is in the Katha Upanishad. Nachiketas asks, who am I? Who is the one? Is there anything about me that survives death? Is there anything about me that that is free of dharma and adharma? Is there anything about me that is free of sukha and dukkha, of pleasure and pain, of this, you know, this pendulum of happiness, sadness, happiness, sadness, happiness, sadness? Swamiji will go like this. This is the samsari, the one who's always becoming. The samsari is on this pendulum of swing of sukha and dukkha, you know. But the swing isn't like this. This isn't how he draws the swing. He goes like this. Sukha, dukkha, 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 sukha. Dukkha, 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 sukha. Dukkha, 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 sukha. We don't want that. We don't want that. We don't even want sukha, dukkha, sukha, dukkha. We don't want that either. Is there anything about me that is free of that? We're talking about me. But I don't know, really, who I am. I am, and this is the viveka, I am, I experience myself as being, as I am a conscious being. I know that. I experience myself. I experience me. It's not that I have no self-experience. I experience me. But I always experience me from the standpoint of the upadhi, from these conditioning adjuncts. And I don't know at this point if they're conditioning adjuncts or not. I experience me as the body. I experience me as the mind, as the body-mind sense organs called Karya Karana Sankhata, this collection of the body, the mind, the sense organs, the prana. I experience me as this. Is that really true? Or am I free of this in some way? So this viveka, so here it says the tattva viveka prakara, we will teach you this method of tattva viveka, this tattva viveka prakara, that will allow you to recognize yourself, who you actually are, amidst all of this. Amidst, in the middle of this body, mind, sense organs, of your total self-experience, because I take me to be this body. I take me to be the body, mind, sense organs. So here I am, but who am I really? Am I all of this? Because if I am, if I'm this body, when the body dies, I die. If I am this mind, when the mind is unhappy, I am unhappy. And so that means I'm in constant state of becoming. That constant state of becoming is called samsara. You can say the constant state of change, but personally for the self, it's a constant state of becoming. There's no end to it. There's no such thing as you have become. You have become and now you're there. There's no activity whatsoever that comes to an end. That's why samsara is a constant state of becoming. It's called the samsara chakra. It means even in terms of birth, death, it's not birth, death. It's from the Vedic vision, it's birth, death, birth, death, birth, death, birth, death. It's a beginningless becoming of birth, death, birth, death, birth, death. It's a beginningless becoming of sukha dukkha, sukha dukkha, sukha dukkha, sukha dukkha. It's a beginningless becoming, like it or not, because we're not perfect beings, we exist within time. Dharma adharma, dharma adharma, dharma adharma. You may be, as you become more of a dharmanishta, it could be more like this. Dharma, dharma, dharma,
adharma,
dharma,
adharma,
dharma, adharma. And what saves us really from that is our attitude. Yeah. But to be an ajnani and think that there's only that all of the karmas that you do are a dharmic expression is not realistic. So I'm going to say forget it. Not true. The Upanishad should say no. You do your best, that's all. But doing your best, you committed a dharma, and that a dharma has a karma pala. You know. But I didn't mean to do the adharma. Yeah, but you stuck your hand in the fire and you got burnt. And you didn't mean to do it. I know. You didn't realize it was an adharma. You didn't realize the fire was hot. That's how we learn, you know. Even with dharma, adharma, you learn. It's not as though Bhagavan lets you off the hook. You do the adharma, you pay for it, you know. And then you learn, okay, this is not how I want to be, because it results in some experience of papa. You become more and more sensitive, you know. You become more and more sensitive to ahimsa, to trying not to hurt any living being. You become more and more sensitive to following the golden rule. Why? Because you experience what it is like to not do that. To not follow that golden rule, you experience the pala of that. That's why Swamiji will often say with this dharma adharma, we don't have to teach you that. Bhagavan teaches you. You know? And no matter where you are in the world, where you are in the world, you will learn by your experience dharma and adharma. And even then, it goes further than that. You learn dharma and adharma, even also just in the way you want to be treated. You're very clear about how you want to be treated. You want to be treated with dharma, always, at all times. Even little glitches of adharma, those are little pinpricks where you can be hurt by the other, because there's some adharma, there's some little thing going on there. You know? So you know very well, you know? And you know from your personal experience what you want, how you want to be treated. So you understand dharma in reference to yourself, and you understand dharma, you learn continually dharma in reference to how you treat the other, because when there's a dharma in there, you experience the pain of that adharma just as the other does. It's not like you do a little adharma to somebody else and they experience the hurt of that adharma and you don't. No, you both share in it. You know, so that's good, because then you continually learn. But try to be a perfect being. It's not happening. That doesn't happen. There's a continual state of becoming. There's the maintaining of dharma. There's maintaining of these attitudes. Just like physically, you want to live. The body wants to live. All beings want to live. Even the trees want to live. In fact, we just gave a... this is just a little aside because it's a sweet thing. We gave a camp for some of the CIS students because I work there. And we were talking, or I was talking about this language of the trees or the sutra, the intelligence of the trees and of all the beings. And one of the exercises, which we can do in here because it's a nice exercise, just go out and you talk to the trees and let them talk to you. Just see what happens internally when you do that. Just listen internally, because the trees aren't going, I am a tree. Yeah. But if you're talking to it and being with it, then let it respond and see what it see what it says. And so I thought, well, I'm going to just go out into nature and be with the trees also, along with the other students. And so I was there with these trees and I was looking at them and I was asking mentally, you know, what do you want? What do you want? What do you need? Because the trees look so dry. We've had so much drought there. You know, what do you want? You know, how can we help? That kind of attitude and asking. And you know what? What came back from the trees in this exercise? We want to live. I was so moved by that. We want to live. That's what we want. We want to live. And I said, I want to live too. Because all beings want to live. We want to live. We don't want to die. We want to live. The trees want to live. The animals want to live. All beings want to live. It's our basic nature. And then, when you think of this, we want to live. What is it? Who is it that you want to live? You think, this Agnani, I want to live, you know? The one that wants to live, you know? The one that you want, let's put it this way, the one that the mind wants to live, right? Is the one who is the Satchit Ananda, who is the most beloved. Everything about your body, mind, sense organs want you to live because you're the beloved. You are the Ananda. You are the most precious. And there's nothing about your whole, every upadi part of you that doesn't want that beloved to live. And the trees have the same self. All the animals have the same self. The cows have the same self. The fish have the same self. Everybody has that from the standpoint of their sukshma sharira and the ajnanam. But even without the ajnanam, it's just a natural inclination of the upadis to want to live because of the beloved. The beloved in you, the one that you cherish more than anything, it is that which is the most cherished. You never want to lose that. So when you say, I want to live, it means I want this which is the most cherished, the most beloved, which we call Ananda, really that which is my own being. I never want that to end. I never want it to stop. Somebody will sometimes joke because people think that when you gain knowledge, then you just exist there as Brahman. And then you won't have any more reincarnation and you won't go on living. And so, say if you were to think that okay, I want knowledge, but I know that when I gain knowledge, that I come to an end. Not true, but say you believe that. I come to an end. Then, are you ready for that now? Are you ready? We're going to give you this knowledge right now. Are you ready? Chandyaka, you ready? You ready? Everybody says, tomorrow, Swamiji. It's a kind of endless tomorrow. So we want to live, but we don't know. Now, all beings want to live. I think that's so important because all beings have the same being, the same self. All want to be lived, to live. All want to be protected. All want to be loved. All want to survive. And so our dharma is ahimsa, non-injury, ahimsa, toward all beings, non-injury, because all beings want to live. And so here, so anyway, this tattva viveka prakara, there, the prakara is a methodology for revealing your true nature, which is kind of confused, you know, confused in the midst of this body, mind, sense organs. And so this teaching, this methodology, this discriminative analysis is a teaching methodology which takes your mind, step, considered a pramana, a means of knowledge. It takes your mind step by step by step in the process of breaking through that confusion. differentiating that confusion, what you've taken yourself to be, who you are, and what you've taken yourself to be, making you recognize step by step those things which are actually as their dresses. So I have to take off each, I've layered in all of this clothing, so I have to take it all off to recognize, oh, this clothing really has nothing to do with me. It's just a dress. I can take off the dress and nothing happens to me at all. But I've never known that. I've thought I was the dress, that this conscious being that I am is because I have this body. And so me, myself, and this body are taken to be one entity. Or I can even say, well, I'm not really the body. When the body dies, I transmigrate. Then I take myself to be one with the subtle body. Or I take myself to be the mind, the intelligent principle, the thinker, you know, the thinker, the feeler. I'm one with that. So step by step by step, we have to realize that all of these conditioning adjuncts are just that. They're conditioning adjuncts, which are tools for us. Very special, very beautiful, very sacred tools. This body is here as a temple. In India, they'll view the body as a temple that is bathed every day, and then the tilak is put on, and fresh clothes are put on. So the body is really a dress, a home for Bhagavan, for Ishwara. That can be done just ritually without really understanding the meaning, but in fact, indwelling as the self of every being is Brahman, is that ultimate reality which is you. That Brahman, that God, that Ishwara, is the innermost being of all of us. And so your body is a temple for that self. But the thing is, every being, all human beings, of all races, of all colors, of all cultures, of all ages, of all genders, every being is a temple for the self. All living beings, all animals and all fish and all birds, you know, all insects and all lizards, all of them, all of the little calves and all the little children, little animal children. We have our human children, but there's all the little animal children. They are all temples, because indwelling all of these beings is the one self. And all of them suffer from ajnana, because they take this me that is the most beloved, that I never want to lose, you know, to be one with this body. And so this teaching methodology, which is called a pramana, right, is the very means for moksha, for those who have become mumukshus. Mumukshus means those who have recognized that there must be something else. You've experienced yourself as whole and complete. That whole and completeness is known to you, but it's known as something that comes and goes. But there must be something to know. There's something else. Even in terms of Bhagavan, there must be an Ishwara, because the creation is such an intelligent manifestation. There must be an Ishwara, you know. Or if I, as a little being, have this intelligence and consciousness, where does it stop? Are we just intelligent little pockets of consciousness walking around? What about this whole creation? Did it come out of a little intelligent piece of consciousness, this whole creation, which is a manifestation of infinite order and infinite intelligence? What is going on? What is the truth? So once I become a mumukshu, and somebody who has in some measure this sadhana chatushtaya, then this knowledge becomes meaningful to me, you know. And I think the experience of mumukshus is once, as this knowledge starts to flow, it's as though somebody, my experience with so many people that have told me similar experiences, it's as though someone is finally saying what in a way I've always known, but it has to be said. And it's amazing to hear the words for this, what on some level you've always known, because it's the reality, and you are that. So in a sense, you've always known that, but this upadhi has not known it. You haven't known it. You haven't known it, but that's the way it is. And so when you hear it, it rings all the way true to your core. And so it's as if somebody is finally saying what you've been waiting to hear. Something like that. So people have their own stories of that. Okay. So now, the way this Tattva Bodha works is it has just used a lot of terms like sadhana chatushtya sampanna, right? Adhikarina. So it's saying the adhikari, this term, you know, it has to be really looked at, what it actually means. And of course, sadhana chatushtya sampanna, we have to know what that means. We have to know what moksha sadhana means. And tattva viveka prakata, we have to know what this means. And so this sentence now, in the next, is going to be broken down. So let's look at the next line. Next one. It says, sadhana chatushtayam kim. Repeat.
Sadhana chatushtayam kim.
Kim means what? What is the sadhana chatushtaya? What is this fourfold group? Chatushtayam means this group of four. What comprises this group of four sadhanas, which is really the qualifications and the attributes and dispositions that an adhikari, a qualified student for this knowledge, we find that they have? It's not that, okay, let me run out and get this sadhana chatushtaya. You already, if you're interested in this knowledge and you don't need, the teacher starts to talk and go, oh no, why did she bring me here? So you bring one of your friends. Friends, they'd probably really be interested in this. You bring your friend to the class, and they're stuck in there. They're stuck in there for an hour. They listen for a while, and there's nothing in here for me. It's like mamokshu twam isn't there. But we find that with mamokshus, when they come to this knowledge, it's kind of the example they use is if you imagine like a brahmachari who has this jada, you know, big matted hair, you know, sitting around the fire, and one spark lands on this, you know, on the big matted hair of this brahmachari, and the hair starts to burn. But fortunately, this fire, and they're sitting around the fire, and this boy's hair goes on fire. But there's a lake over here, thank goodness. How does he go to the lake? As his hair starts to burn, how does he go to the lake? He just says, look, there's a lake over there. I got to go walk over there and stick my head in the lake. What do you think? Not like that. It's hair-burning lake. Hair-burning lake. And so when one is exposed to this knowledge, it's kind of like that. This is it. This is what I want. This is what I need. This is what I've been looking for. Let me have this. Because it resonates so deeply for the mumukshu, because it's something that is holding up as a pramana. We'll see in some depth a pramana. It holds up a mirror to yourself. We'll see that pramana in depth. So here, just to start, sadhana chatushtayam kim. What is this group of fourfold sadhanas attributes that we find the adhikari possesses? So the first one, he goes, nitya nitya vastu vivekaha. So say nitya nitya.
Nitya nitya
vastu vivekaha.
Vastu vivekaha.
If I break the sandhi, nitya anitya vastu vivekaha. Nitya anitya vastu vivekaha. Nitya, the word nitya, means that which is free from time. If something is nitya, means free from time, means timeless, means it is uncreated. Right? If it's created, it comes into being. Right? So there's time involved there. They have a prior condition. So what is actually nitya, free from time, can't be created. It is timeless. If it can't be created, if it is not subject to time, it means that which is here right now has never not been here. That's the first. Something is nitya. What is right now has always been as it is, uncreated. So it is, sometimes if we say, in this world of duality, we can say there is a flow of time within the dual world, past, present, and future, the flow of time. So past, present, future, past, present, future. Where do we put the timeless in this flow of time, the seeming flow of time? Where does it exist, that which is timeless? Because what is timeless can't exist in the flow of time, right? And so if there is such a thing as timeless, we have to analyze what could that possibly be and where is it? So we have to analyze the flow of time. Just briefly, we'll do it in depth later. Just briefly to analyze the flow of time. The past, the present, and the future. But we never experience the past. We never experience the future. We only experience the present. And the present was at one time, right? The present that we have now can be, we can experience what took place before in the present through memory, right? But still, you're in the present. So when something happened before, at that time, you were in the present, right? And then it happened a moment later, you're still in the present. You're still in the present. You're still in the present. In the future, you're still in the present. So your experience is only of the present. You can have a projection of the future, and you can have a memory of the past, all of which is taking place in the present. So Swamiji will say like this, I've always loved this, you are the presence of the present. So the flow of time, as though there's a flow of time, is always taking place in the presence of the present. And I am the presence of the present. My only experience always is only of the present. You try to have an experience of the past. The experience of the past that you're having is a memory that you're having in the present. The experience of the future is a projection that you are right now having of the future. But when the future gets here, that's always the present. And so we can't say that you are the present in reference to past, present, future, as though each one of those has their separate reality. There is no separate reality. There's only the presence, which then, if we look at the flow of, as though the flow of time, the flow of events, these events we remember in the present. And these events in the future we project until it actually is the present. And so nitya, what we mean by nitya is that which is free of time. And in fact, because really for us, from our own vantage point, we are free of time. We don't think about it like that because we're always totally identified with what is time-bound, like the body itself changing and becoming old. All of that. And I remember when I was a child, all of this. And we're identified with that body, so we see ourselves as having had a past, and now we're in the present, and we will be going into the future because we see everything that exists within time being in a state of continual becoming. Right? So it used to be like this, and then it was like this, and then it was like this, and then it was like that, and now I'm like this. You know? But in terms of your actual experience, everything that you experience only takes place in the present. You can't move from it in any direction. Not at all. And so now a viveka is going to have to take place between the one who is nitya, ever-present, right? And that which is anitya. Anitya means that which is continually becoming. Samsara, samyak saraha. Comes from the root sri. That which is continually changing, continually moving, continually becoming. So when we consider ourselves as samsaris, it means that we're on this chakra, really, of becoming. Becoming and becoming and becoming a chakra, a wheel of change. We're caught in the wheel of change. So now, this first thought in the sadhana chatushtaya, we have this first quality of this group of four, nitya, anitya, vastu, viveka. The word vastu means a thing. So this is a vastu, this is a vastu, this is a vastu. Any given thing is a vastu. But in the end, the true vastu is only Brahman, is only the non-dual self. Because as we'll see, as we analyze these things that we call as things, they're not really a thing. They're a nama, or a conglomerate of many, many things. Like this body, we say this body as though it's one thing. It's actually for countless things that work together in the form of a conglomerate that we have one name for. But there's no really thing here. There's a bunch of things that are working together as a conglomerate. But if I were to analyze this body and search for a thing in it, they wouldn't be able to find it, actually. Because there are things within things within things. It's forms within forms within forms within forms. Any form that takes up space, you can divide it. So where's the thing? So just practically say, oh, bring me that thing, would you please? Because I can't think of the name of it. So bring me that thing, please. Let's do that thing. So thing is this very ubiquitous word that we use all the time. But there is no thing, really. Not in reality. There's no thing to be found. Because everything is really a conglomerate. And so really, in the end, what does a vastu? There's only one thing. And that one thing is what we call Brahman. Right? So the vastu, this word vastu, initially we say there's many things here. In the end, we say there's one thing only. There's one non-dual. If you imagine, sometimes we use the example of often Swamiji would use, imagine a sculptor who has a huge, big, rectangular piece of clay. Huge piece, big piece of clay. And in that piece of clay, he carves, he sculpts a most complex scene. It can be a scene of a street in Mumbai. Very complex. It has every type of animal imaginable, in it, every type of vehicle, every type of person, every type of structure, from the little shanty shacks to these big, skyscrapers. There's everything imaginable. So we have this beautiful sculpture. So many things, But really, there's only one thing there. And that one thing is the clay. There's only clay there. But we have this beautiful, beautiful sculpture. All these things that we can differentiate one thing from the other from the other. We say, yes, that's there to be experienced. That intricate sculpture is there for us to experience. But the only thing that is there is clay. We experience this beautiful, intricate sculpture, but upon analysis, really, there's only one being, one substance, that's clay. So here we experience so much duality, such an infinite display of duality, but upon analysis, there is no thing to be found here. There really is only one Brahman, only one non-dual thing. If it's not non-dual, it's a conglomerate. Right? But so the reality is one non-dual Brahman. That's the vastu. And so here, in the viveka, that is the quality that a student has to have half of this. Until they become a jnani, they have half of this quality. Nitya, anitya, vastu, viveka. They see, initially, they see the anitya vastus, that every single thing without exception that can be objectified, that you can experience, that you can have a subject-object experience with it, every single thing without exception is anitya. Anitya means it comes into being and goes out of being. It is in a state of continual change, in a state of continual becoming. I recognize that fact. And I recognize just in my study of the universe, or study of the universe itself, or study of atoms, I realize that there's no end to that. There's no thing to be found. And also, of all of the things that are there, all of them are a continual state of becoming. You go down to the smallest level or the largest level, everything is in a state of becoming, means a state of change. And so these anitya, non-eternal, changing, continually samsara, continually becoming, I recognize that that is the state of everything that I can possibly experience in this creation, including my body and my mind and my sense organs and my knowledges and my ignorances and my relationships, everything. Everything is anitya. And so as I recognize that anitya, that is going to lead me to something else. It's going to lead me to something that we call vairagya. We've got one more minute here. I'm going to just say something. I'm going to do a little bit more on this next class. Swamiji will talk about the four purusharthas. The four purusharthas are the four, well, you can say the artha, the things that a human being seeks, the desires, the fundamental desires, or what we fundamentally seek as a human being. The first one is often artha. Artha means security, in the term of having enough wealth, having enough money in the bank, having a stable home, you know. The second one is that we seek is kama. Kama means we seek pleasures. We seek to do things that make us happy. The third one is called dharma. You know, dharma means we seek to accrue punya. Dharma gives punya. Punya gives us positive results in our afterlife and in our next birth especially. So we seek to accrue dharma, to do good deeds, to do charity, so that I can get a birth and hopefully even better than this one. You know? And so dharma becomes very important. And then there's moksha that is sometimes we view as a purushartha. But actually we want freedom from these three things. We want not to gain security, we need to be free from insecurity. We want kama to gain pleasure because we're not happy. We want to be free, moksha. We want to be free from unhappiness. You know, we do dharma because we want to get a better lot, right? We want to be free from the need to improve, you know, because we don't feel that we're good enough now. I have to improve. I have to improve. I have to be better. I have to be more worthy, you know. So we have that desire to become better, to become better, to become better. I would like to be free of that need to become better. I would like to be free of that. You know? So moksha, even though we say these human goals are this artha, kama, dharma, and moksha, really, and we'll go into this more tomorrow now, that moksha really is what we're seeking. We're seeking freedom from these limitations. That has much to do with the nitya, anitya, vastu, viveka. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavashishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om